Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Welcome to Resource People Podcast. I'm Tara Diamond from AMA, and this episode is on a very important topic that may be triggering and difficult for some to listen to. In this episode, the important work Compass Group Australia is undertaking to tackle workplace sexual harassment is explored. If this topic is sensitive for you, please jump on to another episode. On this episode, I chat with Vanessa Martin, General Manager of Diversity Inclusion at Compass Group Australia, and dive into the wide range of initiatives they have and are implementing as the company works to stamp out sexual harassment. Compass Group Australia's work in this space was recently recognised as a winner of the 2021 AMA Industry Award in the mental health and wellbeing category. Let's get started. Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Vanessa.
Thank you, Tara. Happy to join the discussion.
Oh, wonderful. And it is a discussion. But before we get onto this topic, I really would like you to tell us about Compass Group and give us some context about what it does in the world, but particularly in Australia.
So Compass Group is obviously a global company and we're based in Australia. We have over 10,000 employees and we operate out of at least 600 locations. We have a large suite of work with numerous clients across the resource sector, where we're delivering hospitality and village services and facilities management type activities. And then we also work with defence and we have aged care and hospital services, work with universities, private schools. So it's very mixed, but the key focus of our business is around hospitality and taking care of people.
Thanks so much for that context. Always so important, but super important through COVID, making sure that we're able to give people wonderful services. Mm-hmm. And then I'd also love to hear about your background and your role in Compass Group.
So I work in Compass Group as the National General Manager for Diversity and Inclusion. I'm an Indigenous woman with Menang and Kuring and Bardoc heritage out of the southeast coast in WA. I'm based out of our Perth shared office, but yeah, I travel nationally, COVID willing, both to all of our sites and across our shared offices in Australia. And I have the opportunity to work with our people team across our HR functions and other systems in the organisation to be inclusive and bring diversity to the table as a key priority for us.
Oh, that's wonderful. And thank you so much for joining us on this discussion today, because it is a wider discussion that's happening in the industry at the moment. But I'd like to acknowledge the really renowned and phenomenal work that Compass does in key people functional areas such as mental health and wellbeing, of course, diversity and inclusion. But I really want to know why these areas are such a focus for Compass Group and how your role interacts with its initiatives.
So as a key industry leader in the hospitality arena and working across the resource sector, we have a responsibility and we take it on board quite seriously about working with our clients and industry bodies and other leaders and our customers around being fully inclusive. And we want our workplace and the sorts of initiatives and services that we provide to really reflect the broader workforce, client base, and broader communities in which we operate. So when we look at diversity and inclusion, we want to reflect what we're putting out to also be within our organisation around having perspectives and bringing in different views and reflecting the diversity that's out there across the broader community. We feel that by being that way oriented, it brings us greater innovation. We have happier employees, better productivity, better service outcomes. We understand our customer needs and all the diverse viewpoints and different lenses that people have. And it also expands our talent pool and it helps us become a better business, and it's good business practice.
Wonderful. And I do want to acknowledge Compass Group as earning an AMA Industry Award. So firstly, my congratulations to everybody at Compass involved in the important work that you're doing. And let's get straight to it in terms of workplace sexual harassment. It is such a key topic for the industry at the moment. It always has been, but so many elements externally and internally have really brought it to the fore. Could you tell us about what Compass is doing in this important area?
So thanks, Tara. Yes, it has been really a pertinent topic because what we've observed over the last 12 months has definitely been an escalation in increased number of sexual harassment investigations. And some of those have escalated into serious incidents. You know, you also see the impacts from COVID and an increase in potential risky behaviours that manifest with people when they're under duress or stress related to COVID or job prospects or job loss and health and wellbeing. So we were watching that dynamic. We're seeing a trend, not only in our own business, but that of our clients and other organisations across the country. So it became a critical focal point for us to turn around and take a deep dive and have a look at. We decided that we wanted to sort of look at some of the incidents that were occurring around more of a human performance improvement approach rather than a standard HR risk assessment type approach. So why is sexual harassment occurring as opposed to why did the incident occur?
Right.
And we took a bit of a deep dive, you know, into looking at some of our demographics on our staff. So if you have a look at the Kate Jenkins report and you look at the type of people that are probably at greater risk of experiencing some form of sexual harassment in the workplace, our demographics are we have probably 55% of our staff are female, 10.1% of our staff in our resource sector area are Indigenous. And we also attract a lot of young women that want to join the mining industry. So we're seen as a stepping stone. And a lot of those young women fit the age bracket from about 18, 19 up to 26 years of age. And they're really fresh and young and really wanting to get into the resource sector and using this as a conduit, our roles. And so what we're finding is this is probably the first time they've ever done FIFO or worked on a mine site operation. And then we have a high number of people with LGBTIQ plus backgrounds and people that are culturally and linguistic diverse. And immigrant employees. So it's a real mixed bag. And most of these sort of cohort groups are at greater risk than others of having to deal with sexual harassment in the workplace. So when we looked at that trending and some of the incidents that were occurring, yes, it drew our attention to it. And we felt that it was time to do a deep dive and to rethink this and a different approach.
Wow. Thanks so much for explaining that context. It's so important because the resource and energy industry are working really hard to become more diverse, yet an organisation such as yourself is providing that diversity. But the last thing we want to do is provide bad experiences for these people who are keen to join our industry, who are the people that we really are looking to attract to become the future of the industry. So you mentioned then that you took a deep dive, and I understand you did some research. What are some of the key findings that you discovered in the research in relation to workplace sexual harassment, Vanessa?
Well, we decided to use almost like a mini ICAM approach, and that's that approach of taking a more of a human performance improvement sort of angle to it. And this is because we wanted to take the lessons from that and say, how do we make sustainable cultural improvement within our operations, that of our clients, and the flow-on effect to other subcontractors on site? Mm. What we found from our learnings of doing this mini ICAM approach was that, you know, harassment for a lot of our staff started on the plane to site. It was as simple as that. You walk in with your nice fresh Hy-Vis and you look, you know, young and fresh. It starts straight on the plane, is some of the feedback we got. Sometimes this is the first experience for young women living away from home. They have an opportunity to be in a different environment, experiment with alcohol and new freedoms while they're on site. They get to meet all sorts of different people while they're up working on site on their swings. And sometimes women, or in most cases, it's women are not the predominant number of employees on site. It's predominantly male. What happens is we started to pull all of this sort of information together and realised that there's some key aspects to it that we could implement and work on some education around being aware of your circumstances, your own personal safety, some of the things that you need to be aware of and be proactive about when you go to site in your first role and working in some of these circumstances and conditions.
I'm interested to talk a bit more about personal safety, and then also keen to hear about some of the key initiatives that you've driven from this. And of course, really interested to know, as society has really started to change its viewpoint on any kind of harassment, but in particular sexual harassment, to really take the onus off the person that is likely to be the victim of the harassment to the person that is actually doing the harassment. Are you able to give us a bit of an idea of the key initiatives that you've taken out of your key findings?
So we started, and we're happy to share it with other stakeholders, but we started to do a campaign that we called Respect Starts With You. And it was a respectful behaviours national campaign that we started across our company and all of our operations and sites. And we had some of our key leaders do what we call respectful behaviour videos about different staff sharing their experiences of where that might not have been appropriate and how it made them feel. And we sent that out across our systems. We have internally a number of training programs that we do for staff annually as a part of our training calendar. Mm-hmm. So we started to really promote things like, are you an ally or a bystander? So when you see something happen on site, are you going to stand back as a bystander and watch it but not interject or do anything about it or call it out for what it is? Or do you stand up as an ally and step in to offer support and identify disrespectful, inappropriate behaviour when you see it or experience it? Then we also started to look at, with this younger cohort, particularly of young women and first time of doing FIFO work and turning up to mine sites and village operations where men are predominant and there's a whole raft of other different contractors there, we felt that having a personal safety plan and taking responsibility for your personal safety and being aware of your circumstances and surroundings and some of the pitfalls that you need to be conscious of. So we developed up an induction program for new starters that we do prior to them getting to site. And it has some key components to it. One is about understanding your personal boundaries. And when some of that gets invaded upon, where somebody comes up and they might say to you, oh, Tara, I can smell that lovely shampoo in your hair. And how does that make you feel? Sometimes you think, oh, this person's a little bit too close to me. And it's about educating some young people and new starters in our business to be conscious of that and to be aware of where their personal boundaries, both emotionally and physically, start and end when they're interacting with other people that they're meeting for the first time or getting to know in a village type setting. It's about also being aware that when you're young and you're looking for a career pathway and there's opportunity to network with other contractors and look at other employment opportunities, because what we find is that when you're young, you join us, you might work with us for 6 months, you get to have some amazing experiences, but also you then become a really good commodity, particularly as a young woman, to be able to help address gender equity in other businesses. So there's opportunity to move on to different roles. And while you're networking with colleagues and other stakeholders on site, you don't want to be in a situation where you might be predated upon or be in a situation of being groomed around being offered alternative employment, but somebody has an ulterior motive with you. So what does some sort of predatory or grooming behaviour look like that you need to be aware of and draw a chalk line in the sand on? What does your intuition tell you about certain things is another piece to it. So if your gut feeling says, I don't feel quite comfortable with the way this person's interacting or what they're saying to me, start to listen to it. Also, how many times have we heard different people say that when they got propositioned or pinched on the backside or wolf whistled or whatever, they felt so awkward they didn't know what to say in those circumstances. So we're trying to have a program which says to some of our people is let your no mean no. If somebody steps over that boundary with you and it's inappropriate, you need to step up and, you know, have the confidence to let your no mean no. Because if you don't and you avoid it or you felt awkward about it, some people who are more predatory than others would think, oh, didn't say no to me, so therefore I've got an opportunity to come back on a second bite of the cherry and escalate this. So our personal safety plan and our induction program covers those key themes. It also, we do actually have this little mini cute little tool called a personal safety plan. So when you first get to site and you're allocated a room, what does the lighting look like when you go towards that room? Where are women placed on site? How do I get from my room to the laundry to do my washing? Is everything secure? Like, you can jot down and map out a little personal safety plan for yourself as a part of your induction as you get to site about all the things that you need to be aware of when you're taking care of yourself. It's about having phone numbers and contact for after hours if you feel at all unsafe, and who do you need to call? What are some of the reasons why you wanted to take this job on, and what you're working for and your personal goals that you don't want to jeopardize and have some parameters around? So it's that type of material that we cover prior to getting to site and reiterating it while they're on site to be aware of it.
So I really acknowledge that work in terms of really forearming people to make sure that they are kept physically and psychologically safe. But I want to kind of skip back to the name of that campaign, that Respect Starts With You. Mm-hmm. How have you as an organisation thought about, in terms of on one hand, doing everything you can to keep people safe, but on the other hand, what are we doing to move people forward that are the people that are basically providing an unsafe environment and impacting on somebody else's personal and psychological safety? Have you been able to come to grips with that component, Vanessa?
Yes, absolutely. So we took both angles. So from both ends of the spectrum, not only from the perpetrator end, but also your own individual being aware of and taking responsibility for your own personal safety at the same time. So I think it's both perspectives. So from a perpetrator point of view, start to educate people about themselves and what to look out for and the pitfalls and taking responsibility at a personal level. But then we also developed and used quite a few materials around this whole Respect Starts With You posters and dedicated hotlines to report and address incidents on site. So okay. We have a lot of collateral around putting the message out and having visuals on site as a deterrent to harassment. So if you're a perpetrator and you're based on site, you're looking for an opportunity, if there's visuals out there and there's almost like a campaign running that's in your face that says, mm-hmm. you know, people are looking out for this, it's not acceptable in this workplace, it's a message. And part of that too was using the rollout of Ask for Angela along with our Respect Starts With You posters and the hotlines on reporting incidents and stepping in as an ally. We also started to look at...
So who's Angela? Is Angela the ally icon that you've used?
No, Ask for Angela is a national campaign that started in the hotel industry across the country. Okay. And it's where if you're at a hotel or a venue and you feel like you're unsafe.
Oh, they do it at the bar, don't they?
Yes, you can say to somebody, oh, is Angela working? You know, is Angela here tonight? Is she on shift?
In this context, but that's great.
And it's a code. It's a code. And our staff are warned if somebody rocked up and said, oh, you know, is Angela on shift today? Then that's a message that you're under duress and you need some help and some support. So we use that campaign as well, which is open to all stakeholders across the country to get involved in. And that has a series of posters, and we do little team trains with our staff on site and toolbox activities, you know, in morning debriefs about being aware of the Ask for Angela campaign and put the posters up in the wet messes. We also put the posters up around Respect Starts With You and what's not acceptable behaviours on site. And we also developed up a sexual harassment in the workplace training program that uses a number of different scenarios, and we're educating our site managers, supervisors and staff across the board about what actually is sexual harassment. It comes in a whole variety of different forms, from behavioural to, you know, some of the trending that you see out there is people sexting each other and using, you know, IT, mobile phones, taking photographs, all sorts of different things that occur that fit under the category of sexual harassment, especially with technology. And so we do this training program that we're rolling out, and we're testing it on site to get feedback so we can modify it as we go. We've been sharing it with our clients and other subcontractors, and in some cases we're working with some of our clients to do a collaborative joined up approach. So it's not just us as a first tier subcontractor running a village operation promoting this, but we're aligning with our client that owns that site, ourselves and all the other subcontractors that are working and sending staff to that site to do a joined up approach on running this campaign and rolling out a whole suite of different initiatives that get the message across to the perpetrator that they're on notice, but also to potential victims to be aware of some of the issues and the pitfalls and the things around alcohol consumption and who you're socialising with and not being groomed on site and being aware of certain pitfalls that might lead to potential incidents occurring.
I really love the visual in your face way that you've talked about it and the two different angles that you've approached it. But I think this is something that everyone in the industry, in fact, indeed, broader society is challenged with, which is understanding and addressing the specific drivers of sexual harassment in the workplace. Have you come across anything in your findings or through the campaigns that you've been doing that's helped your organisation get closer to really understanding how we break down and how we can remove some of these drivers to makes people think that it's okay to behave in inappropriate ways?
It's really interesting because if you have a look at, you know, do a deep dive into some of the escalating serious sexual harassment cases, it's unusual for you to be in a predicament where you're going to be sexually accosted by a complete stranger. They're almost like the rare ones. Most of the cases when you deep dive are associated with people that in some shape or form know each other. or know of each other, or they've had some level of interaction. So we found that trending. And part of it is, you know, in most cases too, some of this is opportunistic. So if the circumstances are right, there's an excessive amount of alcohol that's been consumed or hoarded in your room, and you've had some downtime between shifts and you've had the opportunity to get together with the people that you associate as a cohort group on site to have a drinking session. There've been many cases where alcohol has primarily underpinned this incident occurring. There's things like what we found is if you've got appropriate room allocations and the layout of site where females are allocated to particular rooms in particular areas that are better well lit, with adequate CCTV and lighting, and there's almost like a risk assessment type approach of placement so that things are more sort of, I suppose, open and transparent rather than being in a deep dark corner somewhere, and you do that risk assessment approach, you can reduce the incident from occurring on somebody that's an opportunist and a predator. Things like breath testing before boarding and flights and when leaving site, because alcohol again prominently features in there. Where we have security on site, it's like having transport or security coverage for females that are working a late night shift and, you know, things are dark or dimly lit, or there's opportunity to provide better support, or even, you know, potential for having personal alarms available for residents with a loud buzzer in case they feel that, you know, this is unsafe and I'm in an awkward situation that may escalate. The other part we felt is you can have a whole suite of different initiatives and you can do a whole range of training programs and awareness campaigns as a company, but the need for our senior leaders, from our MD to our executive directors on our Australian leadership team, to set the tone with our clients that our employees don't deserve to be treated in a disrespectful manner because they fit that cohort group that I talked about, that related to Kate Jenkins' sexual harassment report, where they're more vulnerable to being exposed to being sexually harassed. You know, some of our staff on site, they might have their first name stitched on their uniform, and, you know, they're aware of having people take liberty on using their name and approaching them and personalising stuff and things like that when there should be some personal boundaries in place. Ooh. So, yeah, when we did the deep dive, it was really pulling out some of these key aspects that reduce the opportunity for a predator to be in a situation where, you know, they've got broader opportunity and almost like situations where it's easy to make this happen, making it harder. Yeah.
It's just terrible that organisations like yours have to go to these sorts of lengths to keep people safe, but it is the reality, unfortunately, of our society, and not just of our industry. And the Human Rights Commission report, Respect at Work, by Commissioner Kate Jenkins, indicated that the degree in which sexual harassment occurs in our society, and our industry is really leading the charge in trying to remove it, because we have the environments where people are in camps, we have areas where we are working in rosters, where people are in, as you described, often vulnerable circumstances. Mm. And the industry really wants to eradicate it. Do you think that that's realistic?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a long haul, but it definitely needs to be happening. And you look at what's out there in society now and younger generations of people coming through to work in the resource sector in a variety of different roles. We see the ads and the campaigns on TV that start even from childhood on how you're, as a parent, inculcating in your children what is respectful behaviour, across gender and sexuality and the whole lot. And it's important to keep driving that. It's interesting because, like I mentioned before, in a lot of these incidents, it doesn't occur with complete strangers attacking you. It's usually people that know you or they've developed some sort of association or relationship or communication with you. But it's also, like I said, both ends of the spectrum where, you know, how many times have we walked out of our offices or workplaces late in the evening and been conscious of how do we get to our vehicle or how do we walk down a lighted path and not put ourselves in the fire, in the line of danger, and about some of the choices and decisions that we make in certain circumstances so that we don't become a victim.
You know, I'm not exaggerating that every woman is brought up to think about, you know, where they work at night and all of their personal safety. And it's just infuriating that it is just such a gendered issue. And I really hope, like you said, that we will be able to tackle it and that it becomes the new anti-smoking and seatbelt wearing issue, you know, in terms
It'd
of public
great, wouldn't it?
Safety, in terms we see in terms of societal change. But I want to ask a different question and a different tack. We've touched on the Human Rights Commission report and how pivotal that's been for not only our industry, but all industries really looking at this issue head on. It's a shame that it often takes these kind of watermark moments to do that, but that seems to have been the case here. And then, of course, there's been a lot of media engagement around our industry because of some of the circumstances that you've described in terms of our environments, locations, etc. And then, you know, I just don't imagine 5, maybe 8 years ago that we would be publicly having this conversation. I think we're very happy to talk about bullying and harassment, but I don't think as an industry we're really prepared to talk.
See, do you know what I say is I think through all of the campaigns and through Commissioner Jenkins' report and everything that's been put out in the domain, even the Canberra bubble issue that's been all over Four Corners and beyond, and some of our parliamentarians with accusations, it's put it in the public domain. And what we're experiencing is a lot more people through our hotlines and respect lines are all stepping forward, and there's more reporting going on. More than there probably ever has been 8 years ago, when it would be swept under the carpet and you wouldn't worry about it. And I remember talking to a young woman that had started in one of our village operations in the goldfields in WA. And she told me how one of her first roles as a utility was to be serving alcohol in the wet mess with a bunch of, you know, miners coming off shift. And when she got propositioned as an 18-year-old, she was really shocked. And her manager way back then said, oh, don't worry about it, love, you know, that's par for the course, just give it the brush off, right? So that mentality of how it was sort of kind of accepted has really started to trend out, right?
Well,
so people are now, it's changing it, So, you know, when you think about how can we be impactful, how is this going to make a difference going forward, we're starting to see more reporting, more people standing up, calling it out, really wanting it to change and really saying we need to do something about it. And so, therefore, increased reporting and escalations of stuff.
And that's what change looks like, doesn't it? An increase in reporting doesn't necessarily mean an increase in prevalence. It means that community standards and society standards and what an individual accept has changed.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing around the gender piece, you know, like here I am, you know, working in diversity and inclusion, and some of the cases that I've heard of or, you know, got to have input into that we've had reported is sometimes it's easy to think, oh, it's a male, it's a female. But then I had a case at one particular mine site where I'm talking to my HR colleague where a security guard had reported being sexually harassed. And I automatically, using unconscious bias, thought, oh, so is a security guard male or female? Or, you know, what was their background? Well, actually, it wasn't any of that. The security guard was male and he'd been harassed by another male. And we've had cases similar to that as well. So it's a real mixture of what is occurring out there and what's now starting to get reported through. But what underpins all of it is about respect and respectful conduct at the end of the day. Because some of these incidents, yeah, you'll get the ones that might escalate to becoming a criminal offence, and they're not a huge amount. They're serious and they're significant. We need to do something about them. There's a lot of other stuff that happens as well that all fits this category that's unacceptable across the board. Yeah.
I wonder, do you have a view on all of this focus, what that means for employers like yourselves at Compass that are trying to attract and retain a diverse workforce in the resources and energy industry?
We really feel that sexual harassment discrimination will never be tolerated or accepted in any sector that we want to be part of. And we really want to, you know, share the learnings and experiences that we've got and the information that we've collated on how we can collaborate with others in the industry to collectively address our residential environments in our village operations, and how we see workplace sexual harassment is not inevitable, but it is preventable. And I think when you take that approach and you're looking at sharing innovation, sharing information, lessons learnt, and the content of our interventions and aligning them to others, you can definitely make a shift and have an impact on eliminating sexual harassment and discrimination as we go forward. That's fundamental underpinning philosophy to all of this.
Well, I absolutely acknowledge and applaud you for that. And I know that you're being joined by so many other companies in the industry in terms of, you know, wanting to make sure that we're doing everything to eradicate it and also keep people safe. And I just think that's a perfect note to end our conversation and our discussion on this very important topic that the industry is working through at the moment. Thank you so much for joining us on Resource People Podcast, Vanessa.
Thank you so much, Tara, and thanks for listening to me and having me on the program. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Resource People Podcast. I'm so pleased we were able to bring you the work Compass Group Australia is doing on workplace sexual harassment, and I look forward to you joining us next time on Resource People Podcast.
AMA acknowledges and pays respects to the traditional custodians of the land from which the Resource People podcast was recorded from today, both the Turrbal and Yugara people. AMA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which you are living, learning and listening to this podcast from today. We pay our respects to elders both past, present and emerging.
Thank you for listening to the Resource People podcast. We look forward to you joining us next time as we highlight the many great stories of the resources and energy industry. If you have any questions about the podcast, please email media@ama.org.au. Produced by Brad Thompson.